And this, of course, is PMPnetwork.com. My name is Mark Snyder. Today with me, I've got a very special guest, the lovely, the adorable Dolly Parton, a brand new CD called The Grass is Blue. And how are you, Dolly? Nice to see you. Are you at a point in your career where you feel like you have a lot more freedom and can follow your own path creatively? I know you're an independent record company at this point.
I think that having the freedom now, see, I don't have a, I'm not on a record label. I mean, I'm not tied up to a record label. I don't have to do anything. And that has given me so much freedom to be more creative, to write more. I don't have to try to be commercial. I'm not having to try to write to please a record label. I'm not having to write to please a disc jockey. I'm not trying to write to please anybody but myself. And I have, since I have got older and not being played on the radio and not having the kind of hits and not having a label, which I could find a label, but I don't want to. It's just like when I did this bluegrass record. Now I can do project by project, just like I said to Steve, if you want to do a bluegrass record, we'll put it on Sugar Hill. I mean, I just did it as that thing. I don't have a contract with them except for this particular thing. And the same with, I have a record coming out with Boy George from Culture Club. It's a spectacular song. And I have the freedom. I don't have to ask a label. I don't have to ask managers. I'm managing myself with no label, and I'm doing the best work I've ever done, running my own production companies. It's like, yes, this is freedom. I've lived long enough to earn it, and I guess deserve it. I'm going to claim it, whether I deserve it or not, and I'm going to make the most of it. But you're right. It's like such a freedom. It's a freedom for me, and I'm just loving my life.
Do you remember seeing your first bluegrass band as a child?
As a child, I was always around music, and all of my people played fiddles, mandolins, banjos, guitars. And like I say, we pretty much defined our music as just mountain country music or just mountain music. But when I started singing on radio and television in Knoxville on the Kaz Walker Show and the Midday Merry-Go-Round and different shows that I would do, they really had self-contained bluegrass people like Jim and Jesse and like the Brewster Brothers, where they really had like, and they sang that bluegrass, high lonesome harmonies, and they were really considered bluegrass people. So, like I say, and then what I was doing would just be playing my own little Martin guitar, which was, it was really just a mix of just the country and the mountains and the bluegrass. So, but yes, I was always around it, and I always knew the difference in that, you know, there was always a definite thing in the groups that considered themselves bluegrass as opposed to just, you know, the country bands. But it was a purity. There was a purity, and they would not, they did not like any electric instruments, even when the guitars and the electric basses and stuff, they were just not going to have that. And so that was really what defined the bluegrass, I think, and made it stay pure, is the purity of it. And I think that their harmonies, bluegrass harmonies, are so definite. It's different than country harmonies. And unless I say you do grow up where you are influenced by both, like in mine, like when I did this bluegrass album, there's so much of Dolly in it, Dolly's way of singing, and just the way that I phrase and all. But yet, when I would sing these songs, that part in my high lonesome soul would remember how the bluegrass people would sing that, so it would just naturally come out that way. So I just think that, you know, like I say, I've always admired, respected, and been around true bluegrass musicians and groups and singers, and so this was such a natural thing for me to do.
What is your definition of high lonesome sound? Do you relate to it?
I think that high lonesome sound is just that mourning of the soul that I think people feel into the depths of their soul. It's almost like being part of the wind, that lonesome, it's like that high lonesome wind. It's like part of, it's just like going deep into the soul of something, and it's a way of expressing it. You know how you have the mournful sounds of, like, sometimes when you do sigh or when you scream or holler when pain is so great, like you've seen. And I think that it's just a way of being able to condense that or contain it somehow into how it can come out and make it musical. But there's just the mournfulness of it. So I just think it's just the way of expressing it, and I just think it's just country depth and soul, mountain depth and soul.
One of your first hits was Muleskin of Blues. Can you tell me your history on that at all?
One of my first big country records, it was considered country, but it was a bluegrass song. And Bill Monroe had had a big record of Mule Skin and Blues. And once when we were in the studio, I was working with Porter, and we had a whole group in, and Buck Tritt, I think, said, well, why don't you do Mule Skin and Blues? And Porter said, yeah, it's a great idea. So we started, you know, we were just fooling around playing in the recording studio before you record. You know how musicians get together and they start jamming. And that one, just somebody just started playing that, and I just started singing it. And Porter thought it was a great idea, and then he started putting whips. And we just had such fun in the studio. He even sent out at, on the lunch break and got a, had somebody pick up a whip. You know, where you get that cracking whip sound, like the, and so, and we were whistling, and so it just was really kind of a fun thing that we did, and we didn't really know what we had. We weren't really planning it for a single or anything, but after it was done, everybody said, man, that is fantastic, you should do that, because I was yodeling, and I was doing my best Bill Monroe. Of course, nobody can be Bill Monroe, but I was doing, you know, my version of it. But it turned out to be a huge record, and, you know, I still get requests for that song. And I even pondered redoing that for this bluegrass album, but I thought, nah, it's kind of what it is. It was a little standard of its own at that time, so no point in rehashing it. I even did some the bluegrass yodels in a lot of the songs off of this album. I purposely tried to do a, you know, the Mule Skinner Blues yodel on the train, and I tried to slip it in everywhere I could to get a, you know, a little bit of yodeling.
You used to play the banjo sometimes. What's your experience with that instrument?
Well, as I had mentioned in several interviews, and
people
always played every kind of instrument, and every kid in every family was used to somebody's banjo laying around, somebody's fiddle laying around, somebody's mandolin. So I just loved it, the sound of every instrument. And I especially loved the banjo because I had an uncle that played the banjo, and then an old man that used to live up the road from us that I wrote my song Applejack off of, and about him, showed me how to play. So, and I actually, if I don't have these long artificial acrylic fingernails on, I can play the banjo, that old claw hammer style, because that, when I was little, when my fingers were just short and stubby and no big fingernails, I could really get a move on that, because it was a big thing for me to learn how to do the claw hammer banjo. So when I was young, I could really play it good, and then I got all sissy, but I can still play it, but I have to figure out how to, a way around it. But I did used to play a lot on stage when Applejack, when my song Applejack was out on an album. Applejack was a great performance tune. I even did it once on the CMA Awards.
One of the most exciting performers around today is Alison Krauss, who is a talented bluegrass performer, and I know she's kind of played a lot with you lately. It kind of seems symbiotic. Wasn't it your husband who introduced you to Alison?
Carl saw Alison Krauss on one of the country shows. I don't know if it might have been the Grand Ole Opry. He said, you know, there's this little girl that she sounds a lot like you, and she's got a voice like a dove. And he said, it's just the sweetest little voice, and she's just got the sweetest little face. You ought to, try to find her. I think her name is Alison Krauss or something. Anyway, so he had mentioned her name, and then different people got saying that she was a big fan of mine. I should meet her because she'd been wanting to meet me. And it was the sweetest meeting, because when we met, she started crying. It was so sweet. And I just claimed her. It was like she was like my little soulmate somehow. Like if I'd have had a child, it would have been Alison probably, because, you know, we had our little voices just blended so well. It just seemed like what came out of us, our emotions seemed to come out in song the same way. It's like and it was just a magical thing. And so Alison sang on several of the songs on this album, as she has on the last several of my albums, and I sang on her last record. I would do anything Alison asked me to do, and she's always been nice to do this, so she's just mine. I just love her. She's definitely got to be part of my family. If there's such a thing as living in other lives, knowing people from other times, we definitely had to have been together in another life, because we're just too close in this one not to have had some sort of history somewhere else.
You know, Dolly, I'm thrilled to speak with you, and I want to thank you very much for the time. And the CD is called, what is it called? Give me my copy of the CD. It's over here. It's called The Grass is Blue from Sugar Hill Records, and Blue's Eye, available in the stores right now. And I guess my final question would be just to tell me a little bit about the experience of recording this album. What do you think?
This was really, sincerely, almost, it was a charmed and blessed project, first of all. It was almost like a spiritual experience to me. The way that it all happened, like from the time Steve and I said, well, why don't we just do a bluegrass album? And then the musicians that he put together, as you well know, are the very best of the best and the nicest people. And they loved each other. They had a great respect for each other. It was such a thrill to hear them all playing together. It was such a thrill for them to be able to have this particular group of people. I'm sure they've all played with different ones at different times, but this particular group doing an album which they seem to have cared about me and respect what I do, because a lot of them go way back in my career and a lot of them remembered a lot of stuff. So they seemed to be very honored, or they seemed to be, and said they were honored to work with me, and I was so honored that I couldn't. It was like when I would go to the studio in the day and just hearing them play, it was like I was going to the world's greatest concert, and I got to be the girl singer. It's like, and seriously, it would move me so much that I would just be I would be emotional just from hearing them in my headphones, like when Jerry Douglas would like take a turn, or Sam Bush, or Stewart, on the fiddle. It's like, God, it's like, it was just, it moved my soul. And everybody got along so great. They loved Steve. He's such a wonderful person to communicate. And, of course, Gary Pichosa, who engineered. We were just all overwhelmed with one another. We were just all getting off on this thing that it was just a magical thing. It was really like going on some sort of a spiritual journey with great music. It was like God's bluegrass band is what it was.
Dolly Parton, ladies and gentlemen, right here on the PMPnetwork.com. Tune us in 24 hours a day for great interviews. I'll see you later. This portion of the show is brought to you by Chinatown and Broughton and Stoughton, and also Mesquinas Motors in West Bridgewater. Bye-bye.